So becoming authentic. So I have always been interested in this topic, you know, whether practicing or not, because in the world we so often hide ourselves, you know, to get along, to not say something that other people might find offensive, to hide a characteristic that we see ourselves as, we don't think it's the best thing to portray of ourselves, you know, a myriad of things, and it becomes, I think, quite a problem. And then I had two things that took place, something I read and something I actually already told you about, but I'm going to tell you about it again. And what I read, a couple of you know that I've met with, I just finished reading Dostoevsky's The Idiot. And I had read it when I was in high school or college, I can't remember which, and I paid absolutely no attention to it, just read it, passed the test, you know, that was it. I couldn't even tell you what it was about. This time I read it with real interest, and it really affected me. And it was about a prince, Prince Myshkin. Anybody here remember The Idiot? It's considered. You do? Okay. Well, I'm fresh, so I know it right now, at least the majority of the plot. So Prince Myshkin is the protagonist in this particular book, and he is a prince, but he is a prince in name only because his family has lost all its money. And it starts with him on a train coming from Switzerland back to Russia. And the reason he was in Switzerland was because he was an epileptic. And at that time in Russia, and this is the 1800s, mid-1800s, if you had epilepsy, you were also considered an imbecile. And even though he wasn't, what he was completely honest and trustworthy and compassionate. And that, at the time, was considered being imbecilic. And so he makes his way to a distant relative to try to get to know somebody because his family's pretty much dying out. And as he's waiting in the anteroom of this distant relative's house, he starts talking to the servant. And Russia in this time also, you never talk to servants. They were serfs, they were peasants, they were, you know, there to serve, not to speak to. And he not only speaks to this servant, the servant is amazed that he's talking to him and then says, well, where did you just come from? And he said, I was in an asylum in Switzerland. I have epilepsy. Some people say I'm an idiot. He said, I think the people who are idiots are the people who put people in prison for no reason and then execute them. I think that's idiotic. And then he goes on with this kind of stream of consciousness, just how he feels about life and confinement, and the servant is just, who is this? He eventually meets his relatives, and he acts the same way. And rather than being repulsed, they are all attracted to him and can't explain why and become protective of him. And then the story goes on from there with his encounters in society. But it really affected me. I just thought, you know, what a neat person, and how difficult that would be to be that honest and that authentic, but in a kind, wise way. He never hurt anybody. He always thought of what he was doing, but he would always be true to himself as well. And the second thing that took place, and I had actually told you all about this a couple months ago, but it brought it up for me again, was when I was in prison and I got there early, and one of the inmates also got there early. He had planned on getting there early so he could speak to me privately. And when he got there, he started berating me because I had given an assignment. I said, I want you to commit an act of kindness this week, and I want you to report in on it when we have our circle. Some of you nodding remember this story. And he told me, that was the stupidest assignment I've ever been given. I can't believe that you assigned that. I wanted to get here early just so I could tell you how stupid I thought it was, which he did, in a lot of colorful language. And I said, well, you know, sorry, but that's what the assignment was. And he said, well, I'm a criminal. I'm not kind. I don't do kind things, but I knew I'd have to sit in the circle, and I wasn't going to be the only one who didn't say anything. So I opened doors for people. That's the best I could do, was open doors for people. And he said, and I didn't smile. I didn't do anything. I just opened doors for them. And then he said, the weirdest thing happened. He said, I did that for a couple of days, and then I get this letter from somebody I used to know that I had a relationship, a woman, and we had parted ways about 15 years ago. This was a relationship he had while he was in prison. He's been in most of his life, and he's about 50. And she wanted to get reacquainted. She wanted to come on visiting day, and he was just overjoyed. He was so happy. He was so happy. And I saw a different person, because he had been rather sullen and extremely quiet, and all of a sudden he's different. And then he asked me, do you think that's karma? Do you think my opening the doors and getting the letter is karma? And I said, I have no idea, but I'd like to think it is. And his demeanor has changed completely from months ago to now, just being a really, I'm not going to say joyous, he's not a joyous person, but involved, you know, getting to know a more authentic person. And yeah, that's what it happened to take. So those two incidences got me very interested in this topic. But it's also a little bit difficult to talk about, because being authentic at first blush, when we hear it, it sounds permanent. And we all know the teachings of anicca, dukkha, and anatta. Anicca being nothing is permanent, and dukkha, there is suffering in life, and anatta, you're not permanent either. There is no permanent self. So when we say authentic, what exactly does that mean? So my theory is, and I'll go into this, this is a graduated path. This is a path where I think we see markers of how we're doing, and suffering starts to decrease a little bit and a little bit and a little bit more. I honestly don't know anybody except celebrities who have said they had this complete awakening and they are totally awakened now. You know, they had this epiphany and they're awake. For us mortals, I think it is just steps along the way, and I think becoming more authentic is one of those steps. That's my theory, and I'm going to go into why I think the Buddha was saying that in his very Pali-ish language in another way, and I'm just, I think, putting it in more contemporary terms. So I wanted to talk about being authentic internally tonight. In 2 weeks, I wanted to talk about bringing authenticity out into the world. And I think more than ever, we need people to be authentic with each other and in society. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that in 2 weeks. So I pose the question, how often have you said to yourself, I wish people knew the real me. I wish I could be really who I am in a particular situation, but I can't because of this or that or whatever is going on. And I know I have gone through that so many times. It's called biting your tongue, or I don't know if I can express myself skillfully. So I'm not going to say anything at all. Even being kind. You know, just as I mentioned about this inmate, he had an identity that wasn't allowing kindness in, which I found out, he found out, was definitely there. It just needed the right twist, the right turn to show up. So, and then the other consideration is, who is the real me? I mean, being authentic means finding some kind of real you, but what is that in this impermanent state? How do we find our authentic selves? So before I begin, I'm asking you, how would you define authenticity? What would you say it is if you were an authentic person? So anybody?
I was just speaking about that to someone, and it is for me a place within myself where I've shed everything that was dead weight, such as it caused suffering, pain, and trauma, and most of it of a lingering nature. And so when I'm able to shed that and become lighthearted, if you will, then the opportunity to be authentic or to be real or to be naturally who I am comes forth in presence. And a lot of it has to do with what's within and the awareness of that. And the reality of it is the body. And so it's also integrity. Integrity walks along with authenticity, maybe hand in hand. And so that's what it actually feels like to me.
Thank you. You just gave my Dharma talk. Thanks a lot. Because I'm going to be bringing up a lot of what you said. And in fact, I'm going to skip ahead to something because you just mentioned it.
I was reading your notes.
Apparently you were. When you talked about cheerfulness, you know, and humor, that's actually a part of it. And I was going to quote, and I'll do it now. This is from Montaigne, and he said, "The surest sign of wisdom is constant cheerfulness." And I like that, because I think, as you mentioned, that shedding causes happiness. And the Buddha said we should strive towards happiness. That's being much more authentic.
And I use the word lighthearted.
You use the word lighthearted, that's right. So, well, he did a very good job. Does anybody else have a definition that? Yeah.
You know, I just saw a movie. It's an old movie, and it's called Being Here or Being There, with Peter Sellers, who was an idiot, really. And the situation he ended up with Shirley MacLaine, a very wealthy family, and they thought he was just the most wise, you know, enlightened being. Because he was very authentic. He was a gardener, a very simple, idiot gardener. And he just spoke what was ever in his heart. And he was very authentic.
Right.
And it blew everybody away. He was an idiot, really. And but he was a very content individual, very peaceful with himself.
Yeah.
So I think he was essence of being authentic.
Okay, thank you.
Being
anybody
there.
Else? Yeah, Barb.
I think it's to use Dharma terms. I think to the extent that that greed, hatred, and delusion, especially greed and hatred, are less present than authenticity is greater. But an awful lot of behavior. My behavior is kind of gets influenced by by those, and to the extent that they're diminished or that I can see that that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, you just gave the other part of my Dharma talk. I think we all go home right now. It's pretty completed. Yeah, that's. I thought you would be coming up with my words here, not false, genuine, real, that kind of thing. But you all are very deep thinkers and really obviously practice some authenticity to know this. The dictionary definition, which isn't nearly as good as all you guys, is representing one's true nature or beliefs, true to oneself or to the person identified. So that's the third definition. Now here's something interesting, and I didn't realize this. The Buddha often called himself the Tathagata. Mm-hmm. And I've always read that it means one who is truly gone, you know, essentially the awakened one. But there's a second definition that I found, and it's one who has become authentic. Mm-hmm. So I think there we go again. You know, I see it as marker along the path is becoming authentic. And this is from Dogen. Before I say this, we have, and I'll be going to this, a small self that most of us live in most of the time. And I'll be describing that, although I don't think I need to describe it because I think you know what I mean. But we go from, say, this continuum of the small self to an awakened being. And we travel along the path doing the best we can and hopefully, as Barb said, start shedding some of this stuff, as Raphael said, becoming true to our nature, and gradually we waken. That's the hope. And so the small self, this is what Dogen had to say, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of enlightenment remains, and then no trace continues endlessly. That's a pretty heavy statement, but that's exactly what I think this practice is all about. In the Theravadin tradition, we might see it as progression along the path of from, sila, generosity and virtuous conduct as a start, a meditation practice, and then the insight that comes from wisdom. Same thing. And that wisdom will be there is no permanent abiding self. But we start with sila because everything in sila is for the benefit of others. It's making the world safe for others. It's starting to eliminate this I, me, and mine. You know, you just think of the first precept. I will not harm living beings. There's nothing in there about I need to be happy. I want. It's I will not harm living beings. So I, me, and mine, that's the small self. We're all there. Frankly, I think most of us spend our time there. And occasionally, we get out of that small self. Occasionally, we start seeing how we are suffering because of this obsession with self. It's a stressful undertaking to stay into a small self. Those of us, I think we include all of us who live in society, who have to pay bills, who have to get along with, as Ram Dass said, you think you're enlightened, spend a weekend with your family. those of us who have to get along with people, the small self is just constantly, I don't want it like this. I don't like this person. I don't want to be here. I don't want to pay this bill. I can't afford my car insurance. Whatever it is, the small self is constantly ruminating about this. And it is a relief when we can get out of it. You know, I'm sorry Rich isn't here because I wanted him to talk a little bit about this, but, you know, when I was teaching beginning meditation, and certainly when people come in into our prison groups, when you ask, why are you here? And Yana and I just started a new group on AR, and that's the first thing that's asked. Because I want to get out of this stressful mind. I need peace and quiet. I don't like this, you know, constantly being worried. It's I. And if fixing it is just looking for different ways of manipulating I, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. I have, when I taught the Sim Retreat, I think 3 years ago, a woman came and she asked me, me privately, have a private practice interview, and she said, and it was her first retreat, she said, I don't get it. I really don't get it. I'm here and I am missing my phone. I really miss the internet. I miss TV. I like all these things. They make me happy. I want to be home with my things. I like my car. I like all of this. Why am I here? And I said, why are you here? And she said, well, something was still missing. But she couldn't put her finger on it. That's dukkha. And I think we've all had that, that unease, that underlying unease when even we think everything is going absolutely fine, but there's still that knowing it's not going to stay this way, because that's not the way life is. To be authentic is to start becoming comfortable with that. Yeah, Bob.
I'm sitting here thinking about when judgments arise, like, for example, let's say I'm around some angry Trump supporter or something like that, and various judgments are arising. Now, if I try to apply, like, the Buddhist value system, it's like, oh, I can see they're coming from whatever causes and conditions they were from. I can relate to them as humans. I don't have to be expressing judgments. But it almost seems like, depending how you define authenticity, that's not being authentic because you're not expressing the strong negative judgments that you have. So I'm not sure would you view those interactions in which you're expressing Buddhist values, even though you're not feeling them. You're feeling very reactive, but I don't mean to be reactive because that's not a helpful, skillful way. In a way, that's not being authentic.
Right. You're absolutely right. But another definition that I'll be going into a little bit is being able to have an interaction also with truthfulness and compassion. So we're still in the small self, you know? You're wrong, I'm right, and I want to argue with you. Truthfulness and compassion, it's we don't have to be right. We can listen, and we can also offer our point of view without anger or getting upset. That's starting to become authentic. Our true nature is one of wisdom and an open heart. That's what the Buddha said about all of us. We cover it up. So authenticity is just starting, as Raphael had said, is starting that stuff to strip away, where you don't become that upset. You might even have real compassion for this person. Want the best for them. And you might say your truth in as kind a way as you can. Yeah?
Well, I'm just thinking here, it's almost like you're saying, well, the true nature is a wise, bodhisattva, compassionate person. So unless you're feeling and acting that way, you're not in touch with your authentic self. But a lot of the time, we're not in that space
That's
at
right.
all. We're in the small self space. So so I guess under your definition, to be authentic to our true self, we would squash down the small self and not let the small self express judgments or anything in an unskillful way.
No, this is a graduated path, you know, and there is not going to be, oh, good, I'm authentic, and now I'm no longer angry, and I can handle this. No, I think it's understanding, yeah, I'm angry, now what's a skillful thing to do in this situation? keeping kindness and truthfulness up front. No, we're, you know, it's gradual. It's gradual. But I think you get tastes of it. I was going to go into that too. You know, on retreat, sitting in meditation, we get tastes of an authentic being. I'm sure everybody here has. Anālio called it small nirvanas. You know, when the insight comes and you realize, aha, that's what's really going on. I see through, you know, that angry person that you're talking about, and you see perhaps a person that's fearful and scared and upset. And that dissipates your anger. Your authentic response now is one of compassion and kindness.
Well, it might be, or it might not be. So that's the question. I mean, you can define the authentic self as the good Buddhist values, and if you're not, if wherever you are at that moment isn't there, then, well, that's not authentic, so I'm not going to express what I'm saying.
Okay, I'll give you an example of what I mean. And one of you in here, and I don't think she's here tonight, and I've shared this with my Brahma Vihara class, came up to me and said, "You are really bossy." And it, thank you, Bob. And my first impulse was to be insulted, and my second impulse was, "That's true. That is true about me. I've always been bossy." And the double whammy is, for women in this society, to be bossy is really a couple marks against you. You can use the B word and everything else. Women aren't supposed to be bossy. As I thought about it, I thought, but if I hadn't been bossy, which is part of my nature, you know, it's just part of my nature, I wouldn't have started a business, successful business that went on for 30 years. I wouldn't have started a nonprofit. I wouldn't be sitting here. So what's wrong with being bossy? I think it's how we're defining ourselves as we try to look at our authenticity. I spoke to somebody today who spoke about having to tone down their energy. Why? That's a wonderful trait to have. You don't need to tone it down. You just need how to work with it. That's part of your authenticity. As long as we are not causing harm to others and to ourselves, that's authentic. And humor arises with it, as Raphael had said. Does that begin to get there?
Well, I'm still thinking that. To me, it seems like there's just things that arise, and saying you're being authentic kind of implies that there's some, to me, there's some solid core.
Exactly, and that's what I said.
Almost, that's
right.
The good self, and if you're not feeling the good self, personally, I'm fine with not being authentic in that. If I feel angry at someone, I usually think, okay, is it really going to be useful to even express anything, or is that just like there's really not much point? I'm fine with not expressing my truth or being angry. And it seems like that would be one way you decide being inauthentic, but it seems that's okay to me because I'm just trying to not create more suffering in the world, and expressing what I'm feeling right then is okay with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's authentic. Yeah, Jeff?
I feel like Zen talks about this all the time.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah, because you always hear about the Zen master as someone who sort of responds to the moment from a place with an appropriate action. Joko Beck, who, there's a story of her, she was walking down the beach. She was 75 years old. She was walking down the beach with a friend, and there were two young men in a fist fight, and she yelled at them to stop. And the woman walking with her said, "You're a Zen master. You're not supposed to get angry." appropriate. She said, that's ridiculous. That was the appropriate action at that
moment.
But I'm just wondering, does our tradition, I haven't heard that kind of concept or the sort of centrality that it seems to have.
I'm going to go into that in just a little bit. It actually is, but it's in slightly different language. And so I'm trying to put it in more contemporary language. But you're right about, I believe that authenticity also has to be fluid, you know, depending on the situation. And fluid. Yeah. So as Jis was saying, and since there is nothing permanent and everything is changing, authenticity changes too, depending on the situation. Like the example you just gave. But I would bet anything that was skillful anger and not anger wanting to harm. And there's a difference. Anger can be skillful when it's put to good use in alleviating suffering and not causing suffering. Somebody else had their hand up. Yeah, Barb.
In Bob's example, it seems to me that there's the first expression or phrase that came to mind was something that fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
The better way of saying it is you practice the way the feeling or the behavior that you want to have, not the one that you're necessarily feeling. And I don't think it's inauthentic if you're not identified. So if you become identified with the anger and say, well, I'm really just an angry person, and so I have to, you know, act on that. But that's identification, and that's making solid, permanent something that isn't.
I agree with you, and in fact I'm going to go into where I think this is kind of brought out is in Buddhist practice called the 10 fetters.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the aspects that need to drop as we awaken. Okay, and the very first fetter is self-identity, exactly what you're talking about. It's the I, me, and mine. It's I am separate from everything else. I'm this lone identity that is in the world by itself, and I, you know, nothing changes. Self-identity, the very first fetter that has to go. Now, this is Orthodox Buddhism. The first three fetters, you are a stream enterer, which means you're well on your way to awakening. You only get 7 more lifetimes, or maybe you live in the Brahma realm. You don't have to believe any of this stuff, but I think it's the definitions of these are very helpful, you know, especially the first one being self-identity. That small self, I'm calling it small self, has got to be uprooted because it hides the more authentic self of yourself. I'm not going to go through all the fetters. But the second one is doubt or uncertainty about the teachings, and especially about the self. I don't believe that. You know, I know I'm here, and I'm more important than my desires are more important than anything. And then the third is the attachment to rites and rituals. Mm-hmm. And in the Buddha's time, the Brahmins were the only ones who could change things, change your karma, keep the world together. So it was investing in rites and rituals. Nowadays, well, I'm sure we could name all kinds of rites and rituals we perform. I know when I was practicing Catholicism, look forward to confession, get rid of that. Good, I'm good to go, clean slate, start over again. In our tradition, a guru, you know, I will just do exactly what that person says, and I'll be okay. You know, this is just the small self again, not looking at itself in a more spacious way. I'm going to skip to number 8, which I think is along the lines of what we're talking about, especially the small self, is conceit. And conceit, as I said, is, you know, from one spectrum of narcissism to self-loathing. But it's still obsession with self, and it's still painful. And according to Buddhist philosophy, this is not our authentic true nature. Our authentic true nature is spacious, it's heart-opening, and it's insightful. And the authenticity that I'm talking about is starting to get there. And Bob, everything you said, actually looking at what's taking place, yeah, I'm angry, that's being authentic. That's really seeing what's taking place. It's not that person is wrong. It's I feel anger. That is really seeing what's taking place, not just reacting, but actually responding and knowing what's going on. And I know you can see the difference because we talk a lot about reacting versus responding. That's being authentic. You knew what was happening. You're mad at this person. That's your authenticity. And then you can decide what to do with it from there. Yeah, Maurice?
It just occurred to me that when you were talking about having an identity being first fetter, in Bob's case also identifying the other person as they're just this issue that that we don't agree on, have the same viewpoint on, collapsing that person's identity into this, you know, we don't like it when it's done to us, but we do it all the time. And seeing that, you know, this is a person that has a life and that this, and, you know, and we just happen to be intersecting on this place where we don't agree.
I think you're right, and as you're saying this, I'm thinking, I think mindfulness creates authenticity, you know, as we are really aware of what's taking place. We start knowing ourselves, and that's starting to be authentic.
I have one question.
Sure.
This idea of anger, because it's always, at least in my experiences with other people, it's always seen as a negative thing. And in a society and a culture that we're living in now, it's extremely difficult to express yourself in a culture where what you're saying may be the truth, but it's caused angry, upset.
Right.
You know, why are you saying it's based on truth? It's based on facts, it's objective, but yet it's considered a negative thing and shouldn't be discussed among and around certain people. Now, to me, I guess my question is anger justified at certain times? I see it as a very positive thing. If based on truth and facts, but interpreted by someone who is not willing, either because of their own current situation, to acknowledge what is being said. So you get labeled as someone who's very angry in this society when you start talking about that, especially in groups. It's hard to deal with.
It is.
So how would you suggest in a situation or a current situation as we have today in this country, that one should be able to deal with that?
That's my next talk. That's exactly what I was going to talk about next time. But I think, in a nutshell, I agree with you. I think anger can be used very positively, done right. And that means not, I am angry, but anger is taking place because of this injustice that's taking place. Because when you're not involving the small self, you will come up with much better solutions than, I'm pissed off, I don't like this. But to say, this shouldn't be happening, this is not right. Now what can I do about this? Yeah. So you can see the small self, how it's almost self-defeating. Anger can eat you up. You're not going to do anything if you're just continually in turmoil and just are raging.
But it can be a very positive thing, and an expansion of self.
Yeah. It's the only thing that has kept a lot of things going in improvements in society, because there were people who were angry. But you think of Martin Luther King, I don't think of him as an angry person.
No.
I think his anger was well placed, and he knew how to use it.
Right.
And that's the difference. That, to me, is authenticity, and not just stewing in your own juices and really doing nothing about it. You're not being authentic. You're letting an emotion take over.
Yes, you're being fearful.
Yes.
If you don't do that.
And that
you're being
is
a coward.
That is actually one of the other definitions of a small self, is fear.
Right. Definitely.
Okay, come in 2 weeks. We'll talk about that in society. So the Buddha himself, you just think of the Buddha in his time. I don't think he was angry, but he knew there were definitely things wrong with his society. And he told his truth about them. Women had never been ordained. Women were considered animals. You know, not worth much more than animals. The Brahmins ran everything. And he made them angry by taking their power away. He had real differences with, like, the Jains at his time. The Jains said there was a permanent soul called a jiva. And the jiva went on from one life to another, and only your karma could change it. And he said, you know, karma, actually, I believe it's, he talked about five kinds of karma. One of them is nature. You know, things happen. Earthquakes happen. Lightning happens. All these things happen. There's some things that have nothing to do with karma. It's life. And the Jains didn't want to hear that, but he spoke that. I doubt if he spoke in anger, but he said, I got to tell the truth. And it made such a difference. One time I was having, this is many years ago, difficulties with my practice and all sorts of things, and I went up and saw John Travis for a practice interview. And after talking, you know, for 45 minutes, he said, you know what your problem is? You're not being authentic. You're not being yourself. You can be yourself and speak kindly and with compassion, but be yourself and tell your truth. And that has been one of my guiding principles ever since. I will try to be truthful, but I also don't wish to cause harm to others. So to the best of my ability, that's what I try to do.
So, I mean, I was just trying to think of in just day-to-day encounters with people that I don't feel their authenticity when they're talking to me, like you know, an HR person asking me how I am, or doing stuff because they have to, not because they care, or just, you know, I mean, there are people that just really come off as not authentic, and just going through the motions of something that might even sound nice, but you know deep down they don't care at all. You know?
And you can't change them. You can only change your response to them. And you can be authentic to yourself, but also realizing I have got to be kind as well. Because that is getting towards your authentic nature. Kindness, as the Buddha said, is part of our authentic nature. But, you know, you can be annoyed and everything else, but what's the most skillful way to go about this? I can't change them. There's no way. So, suggestions for becoming more authentic. I can't believe it's 10 to 9. Well, obviously, meditation and one practice I've been using recently, which has been quite eye-opening, is the meditation of just asking, who am I? And just try it. I mean, actually sit there and figure out, who am I? What's going on? And you can get some surprising results from that. Give yourself some time. Maureen was saying the other night at our Brahma Vihara class that you had actually sat for 3 hours. And those are the times to ask, who am I? Because the mind is completely just, there's nothing there. And insight arises. Ian?
So I'm more familiar with meditation and keeping my mind blank, counting maybe, or observing my thoughts, but... Something like that. Do you have any beginning advice? I imagine if I sit there and I start asking this question, I'm going to generate a lot of thoughts. So are they all going to be productive? Do I follow them all? Do I sit and wait for some that seem more meaningful than others?
What I would suggest is you say it over and over again to yourself. I mean, maybe wait 10 or 15 minutes into your meditation and then just pose the question, who am I? As the mind is starting to settle down a little bit. And yeah, you'll come up with some ridiculous things and maybe not so ridiculous things, but keep asking. Just keep asking over and over again. And just start seeing. I'm not going to lead the witness. Just start seeing what comes up. And if you can spend an hour at that, you might be very surprised at what takes place. So, because I've only got 9 minutes now, suggestions for becoming more authentic. Well, meditation, I just mentioned, asking the question, who am I? Being honest with yourself, as Bob had said, you know, honest, what is going on? Don't deny what's taking place. And then you can be skillful about, how do I respond with this? What do I do in this situation? Because wisdom is also part of your authenticity. Use it. This one, I think, is one of the most important and probably the most difficult. It's a vulnerability, being willing to be vulnerable. And I've learned this from inmates probably more than any other lesson. When they are willing to be vulnerable, it's amazing the breakthroughs that take place. And in that environment, it's a brave thing to do. But boy, the authentic self, the kindness and compassion that's there really shows up. Barb gave this one already. Knowing when greed, hatred, and delusion are present doesn't mean that they are not going to be there, but mindfulness, know when they are present. And then you have your innate wisdom to know what to do with them. And finally, seeing, and this goes into delusion, seeing delusion for what it is. Are you deluded about yourself? Are you deluded? Mostly we're deluded about others, thinking that they are so completely different than us, when actually we most of the time could flip places. You know, we might be having different political ideas, religions, but emotionally we could flip places. And if we start understanding that, maybe we can be kinder and more understanding, which is going to accomplish way more. So, as I already said when Raphael was talking about humor, the sure sign of wisdom is constant cheerfulness. And I was talking to a couple people the other day saying, you know, you look at Tibetan monks and nuns, they're always happy. You know, they're always cheerful and joking and smiling. That's authenticity. You know, they have looked at their lives quite honestly and they've become truly authentic. So, your home practice, if you decide to take it on, and I'll post it on our website. Hari gave you one during meditation. Ask the question, who am I? You have to be willing to sit with that for maybe longer than your usual meditation period, an hour. But try it. Just try it. Keep coming back to it. Just like everything else, it's going to slip away and you'll go off into your storyline and what you're going to eat and who you're going to see and all that stuff. Come back. Keep coming back. The mind is going to grow tired and it will settle down and it will start providing you some insight. Second is, what have you discovered about your small self? You know, when you're really constricted, angry, disappointed, jealous, what happens? That's a small self. How does that feel? How do you get out of it? Remember, I gave the talk on Anallio, and he had said, don't get angry at yourself for this. These are hindrances. Make a chess game out of it. How did I get to this place, and how do I get out? Make it a move. What do I do now? Because this is very uncomfortable. This is not the authentic self. This is sticking to the small self. And then on the opposite, when have you had periods of authenticity when you really felt you were true to yourself, you were true in what you were saying, and you got it across because you were authentic? Not angry, not in a manner of, I've got to be right, but truly stating the truth for yourself in as wise and kind a way as you could. And then, who do you know that's authentic? And just think about that for yourselves. You know, somebody past, present, who's been authentic that you've got some admiration for that you could emulate? Right. So that is the end of this talk. We have 4 minutes. Does anybody have any comments or questions that I probably can't answer, but happy to listen to them.
Are those going to be posted in your...
I'll put something online, yeah.
Those questions?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. And I was thinking, I'm not sure, probably the next time. I had planned on doing this as a three-part series, but I think it's only going to be two parts because we're starting a new series in July. And the next time in 2 weeks, I want to talk about authenticity in the world when society so badly needs people of authentic honesty and concern coming forward more now than ever. And then a discussion on how do we do this and how do we be authentic in the world and make a difference. So that'll be next time. Okay, no comments? Nobody has anything to say? Okay, one comment.
Something happened when I moved, and I got a new house, and I had all the boxes and everything like that, and then in the process of going through these boxes and trying to figure out where they were going to go with the new house and blah, 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 it came up to where I was like, kind of like I realized that it's like read all this stuff, and why did I hold on to this, and why did I move this, or where? And it was kind of like, it became clear that we recreate ourselves
mm-hmm.
according to our past. And it's kind of like, am I still interested in this? Do I just want to keep doing this because I've done it in the past? You know, and so that just kind of, for me, it was like becoming more authentic. It became clear that kind of asking that question, it's like, what do you let go of? When is it time to let go of who you thought you were and what you did with your time and what your interests were? And, you know, maybe I'll wake up tomorrow and go, you know, what do I want to do today? Something I've never done before.
Yeah, this is authenticity, being fluid, you know. Perhaps that was needed at one point in your life, and now it's not. And being authentic is recognizing that. I forgot to share this, and I'll tell you briefly. I went to see, told some of you, to a Deva Premal concert that Raphael was at too, in the front row. And before I went with a group of friends, a very interesting group of friends, a former homeless woman, a 15-year-old, 30-year-old, and then three people my age. And before we went, we stopped in Nevada City, and the guy who was driving us, didn't know it, bought all of us these little stones. And they're little trinkets, and on one, you know, they're smooth, and they have a saying, like, you're enlightened, or good luck today, or something like that. And at dinner, he just passed them out. He was very happy passing them out, and we all took them, and we read them aloud, and what that meant to us. And then he said, okay, and this is what I want you to do. When we get to the concert, I want you to find someone and give it away to them. The guy is very cool. And this is being vulnerable. This is being vulnerable, going up to somebody, a complete stranger, and just saying, I want you to have this. And it was a wonderful exercise. In fact, maybe 2 weeks I'll assign this for you, too. Try this. And I found a guy at the concert. He was kind of standing by himself, and I went up to him, and I said, excuse me, and he looked at me kind of concerned. I said, I'd like to give you something. He looked horrified. And then I took his hand, I put the stone in. Mine said, luck. And he looked at it, and he said, thank you so much. And I felt so good. And I was so glad I was vulnerable in being able to do that. Went back to our group. I did it. I gave away my stone. So being vulnerable also, and you feel that authenticity inside of you of just happiness, you know, of having given something away, not holding on. It was a great feeling. So with that, it's 9:01. We're going to end the evening. So may our practice together benefit all beings. May we develop authenticity in our lives. Authenticity, which also means wisdom and kindness. And may we bring that into the world as well as into our own lives. And may this help us on the road to awakening, to complete awakening, as just yet another step.